Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill.
Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we are thrilled to have my dear friend Olga Tsogas on the podcast. So Olga is the proprietor of Smugtown Mushrooms and the instigator behind the New Moon Mycology Summit and a general mushroom enthusiast, expert, mushroom grower. How are you today, Olga?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. Woke up, the birds are singing.
Love that.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we have a traditional question for the first question on the podcast, and it's, how did you come to the plant path? And for you, I'll ask, how did you come to the fungi path?
Well, first, let me say thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pleasure to be here. I think I got on the mushroom path because I was on the plant path and was getting into herbal medicine and traditional medicine, and started learning more of what was growing outside, and took a natural history class at my local community college, and we had a fungi day, and it was a good year, I guess, because we found like over 150 species.
Wow. 50
in one day in just a couple hours.
Cool.
And 40 of them edible, you know, and pounds of gorgeous chicken mushroom, giant puffballs. And I was like, wait, what? And took some home and cooked it up. And I always liked mushrooms. It was definitely something that I enjoyed, and, you know, have memories of my mom cooking some like every New Year's Day with like lots of parsley and white wine and garlic and butter. And like, always remembered like loving that, and just got hooked because I'm like, this chicken mushroom, or, you know, Leptospirus sulphureus, the sulfur shelf is amazing, you know, especially like when you're a beginner, it's like your first like step in. So that was the beginning. And yeah.
So I love chicken mushrooms.
That's the path. And it started by way of for sure medicine, but definitely like by food, the gastronomy of them.
Yeah, they're so delicious.
It's
hard to get hooked once you try them. I remember the first time I had chicken mushrooms, just being like, oh my gosh, the flavor and the texture and everything. It's definitely understandable how you can get hooked pretty easily. And so it seems like you got hooked pretty hard.
Pretty hard. Yeah, I just like kept on learning. I joined my local mushroom club. I just started attending more mushroom events and learning from other people and going out more into the woods and tasting and smelling what was going on.
Awesome.
So how did you finally go all in and like start a business about it? And like, you know,
well, I mean, it's just funny because I feel differently now, but like, you know, I was really inspired by Paul Stamets back in the day. And this was, we're talking like at this point, like, yeah, 18 years ago, was inspired by him, and, you know, got, they had their catalogs and I was like, ooh la la, this is, sounds amazing. And also the concept that like, I live in upstate New York where you can't really forage for mushrooms all year round because it's freezing in the winter. So I started wanting, you know, started thinking about cultivating mushrooms, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna like start a farm and like maybe be the next Paul Stamets or something. Like, okay, like funny, okay, semi embarrassing, but
okay, better okay than Paul Stamets though, 18 years later.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, it's just different. Like, thanks, Paul, thanks, yeah, you know, but. Yeah, and then the cultivation, I mean, it just became really overwhelming because like when you do start learning about mushrooms, it's like, it's not just the mushrooms for growing and for the kitchen, it's also for the medicine cabinet, it's also for the soil, it's also for materials. It's everything. You know, the mycelium is overwhelming when you really start to think about it, the potential of like different pathways you can start growing mushrooms and cultivation, and, you know, maybe even on a commercial sense as well. And one day I was, you know, actually cleaning out a storage facility to start growing mushrooms with just a small stovetop sterilizer. And someone was like, "Hey, Olga, there's a giant autoclave at the Rochester Public Market in this warehouse down there. And like, dude might be interested in selling it." And I ended up buying this guy's 18-foot autoclave and started growing mushrooms from like a stovetop situation to an 18-foot autoclave. It was a giant learning curve, but.
So wow. What's an autoclave exactly?
An autoclave is a sterilizer, pressure cooker, a giant pressure cooker, also potentially called a retort. And So we put the substrate or the stuff that we feed the mushroom mycelium into that vessel, mm-hmm. and we sterilize it. So when we put our mushroom culture in, it doesn't have any competition. It can start snacking on the sawdust or wood chips or grain and go to town, and then fruit beautiful mushrooms without any problems.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And that space was really awesome because we were at the public market. It was central. We were there for 4.5 years or so, and we really wanted to stay there. The day before we were signing a new lease agreement, my landlord at the time took his own life.
Oh no.
And then like the building got swooped up by developers. They gave us like basically like zero options to like stay. And yeah, it's been a kind of like a struggle ever since, because we like put so much into that space, you know, but we're doing so much more. And that was a while ago, but just so a little.
What is Smugtown Mushrooms, and what is a Smugtown, first of all?
Yeah, so Smugtown Mushrooms is like our farm and, you know, business organization. I don't know what we want to call it. I hate really the word business, but I guess that's what it is. But educational component, whatever.
It's what you're busy with.
And it's what we're busy with. Smugtown Mushrooms is like our farm, and it's named Smugtown because like Smugtown's a nickname for Rochester, New York. Oh. And there was like a book called Smugtown USA. It was like a satire just about how snooty people were around here. Uh-huh. And maybe still are, I'm not sure. But because we really thought we were going to like kick it local, you know, and I never really thought that we'd be out of Rochester so much, doing classes, vending at farm shows, like Clearwater Music Festival, where I think that's where we met, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just doing things like out of town and out of state, mm-hmm. and, you know, and now out of the country. And yeah, that's basically the vibe, what Smugtown is basically. We're just like, we're growing mushrooms, we have fresh mushrooms for our local markets. We have grow kits and medicine on our website that we can ship out to people. And we teach classes and organize events.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your events that you're organizing. You have the Newman Mycology coming up in just a few short weeks here. It's August 11th.
Two weeks.
Now we're recording. So what are you excited about this year for Newman Mycology Summit, and maybe an overview of what it is for folks who maybe haven't heard of it yet?
Yeah, for sure. So the Newman Mycology Summit is a gathering that a collective of people organize from different parts of the country, where we're trying to have classes and information definitely about mushrooms and mycology, but also beyond that, because as we know, mycelium, it's all connected, and bringing that a little bit deeper, because a lot of us that do and are in, you know, the general quote mainstream mushroom worlds, some of us maybe just desire a little bit more content and substance and conversation and discussion about, you know, certain things like ecological justice and social justice and how those concepts potentially interact in even mycology. Mm-hmm. And gender studies and earth defense and gardening and art and all these things, right? Mm-hmm. So we have made an amazing time of people. We brought a lot of amazing speakers together. There's 50 plus speakers. There's panel discussions. We feed folks 3 meals a day. It's sliding scale. Pay what you can. No one turned away for lack of funds. And usually it's in New York State, but this year it's in Vermont. And we're just excited because it's our first one since 2019. And we're really happy to be back.
Yeah.
The New Moon Mycology Summit.org.
Okay, sweet. So that's where people can go. We can put that in the show notes as well. And then you also said you were organizing some events out of the country too. So can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So a little like leg of one of the things that Smugtown does is that I get to return and provide the concept of going to Greece and foraging for mushrooms in Greece. The country of Greece, not Greece, New York, which is ironically where I'm from as well.
That is hilarious.
I don't understand. And yeah, we spend 10 days. It's not just me. We bring other experts on and we have, 10 days of visiting some beaches, some mountains, hot springs, interact with locals. And it's not just like mushrooms. We definitely like engage with plants. We cook, we just partake in local culture. We have, you know, potentially some music going on. We're still trying to figure out the musicians, but yeah, it's just a hoot. It's just a hoot. And it's a small group. We max it out at 12 people. So it's like intimate and relaxing. And it's not like a tour in the sense where it's like one thing after the other. People have free time to like enjoy and relax as well while they're in Greece.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And very off the beaten path, you know, not Santorini or Mykonos or places like that. We do go to the beach, but we don't hit up those places.
Cool.
So how did this idea start? Like, how did you come up with the idea and where did you, like, have you been going to Greece for a long time or how did you find the spots to like forage in a totally different country?
Yeah. So I've been going to Greece a lot since I was a kid. I would go almost every summer since I was like 5.
Wow.
But I had like some breaks, you know, like early 20s didn't really go. And then like went there in like my mid 20s. And I was like, oh, like everybody like hunts mushrooms. Cause where I'm from in Greece is like the mountains, you know, right on the borderlands of Greece, Albania and North Macedonia. And so it's not the coastal, it's not that like classic Mediterranean. It's like chestnut trees and oak trees and beech trees and really similar ecology, actually. I shouldn't say that, but there's a lot of similarities, but yeah, kind of that northern hardwood vibe, if you will. And yeah, mushrooms are popping. And I was like, yo, I think people will like this, you know, and just start meeting other people and meeting other mycologists and just connecting with other mountain folk, really. And just started making it happen. I think like the first one was in like 2016. Yes, 2016. Excuse me. And we did them 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, took breaks for Rona, and then had our first one back in 2022. which was a fantastic time. And we're doing two this year in 2023.
Wow. Oh, cool.
That seems like such a great idea too. I mean, one of my favorite things about traveling, and I haven't traveled that much outside of the US, but I've traveled extensively within the US, is being in different ecosystems and like really like connecting with the ecosystem mm-hmm. that you're in. And that seems like a lot more like that. I mean, you're totally connecting mm-hmm. with the ecosystem, with the trees and the fungi and the plants, and you're not just like on a resort or something, you know, where it's kind of less about that connection of living beings. And so I like that idea. Absolutely. Seems like a much more
nice. I mean, it's just like a really like nice way to interact too, like with another place that you don't know, instead of like, I don't know, I don't even know, just sitting at a resort and being served drinks, right? And like nothing wrong, like whatever, people do you, like everyone do what you want to do, but you know, I think like having a more interactive way that isn't that is nice as well. And
yeah, well, there's a lot of different.
And I'm happy to share that. And I'm happy to share Greece, because like I love it and I want to spend more time there, and I want my loved ones to come so I can host, because that's also a thing that, you know, Greeks have, is like, and not just Greece, but like a lot of the Eastern Mediterranean cultures, like we like to host people. And if like you come to our home, we want to make sure you're good, like, you know, fresh sheets on the bed, like meals, like sandals, or, you know, like house slippers, you know, like, and I think that translates to like the New Moon Mycology Summit.
I can see that. I
think that translates to like, just in general, like hosting events and hosting folks in Greece, is that, you know, I want to like serve people in some way, like beautiful food and an experience and a time where, you know, they're feeling cared for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my family also, like, I grew up in a Greek diner culture. So it's like, I literally was like serving people like coffee and, you know, breakfast at a very young age.
Cool.
Wow.
I remember one year you came back from Greece, like just swooning over this giant grandmother elder.
I know. they cut her down. And they didn't, for nothing. I went back maybe 2 years later, because I would always visit her.
Oh.
It's in this amazing spot where, I mean, it's still a beautiful place and all her offspring are hanging out still. Mm-hmm. But this elder there, so old. I've never in my life seen an elder tree that large. You know, it looked like a giant red oak, you know, or how big, like, wow, you know. And, but this area in northern Greece, that, you know, it's just like a monastiraki, just a place where they have an old church.
Mm.
It's not really a monastery, but it's like an old church. It's from 1023.
Wow.
And it's so old. And there's all these little springs, and they've built all these little spring houses. And so there's probably like five springs, and there's an old growth beech forest back there, or very mature beech forest. And you can just tell people have been hanging out for a long time there worshiping, not for sure, you know, pre-Judeo-Christian settlement, you know. And it's a powerful place. Hopefully that's actually on our spring 2024 stop.
Cool.
Is visiting that forest. And
I wonder how old that elder was.
I feel like it could have been like hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like it was giant. I couldn't even believe it. And the road leading up, you know, it was like warm out. We had the windows rolled down. I was like, what is that smell?
Cool.
And, you know, I hadn't smelled elderflower like that before, you know, where it's just like, okay, we have this like giant elder tree, but like also all its children around in this like spring fed, like the headwaters of this spring fed creek. And yeah, beautiful, but you know, they had to cut it down.
I'm sorry.
My condolences. I don't think that, I mean, if we go by lore, they probably aren't having too happy of a time now.
Exactly. Exactly. I can't even, I got more stories about that. That place is interesting because like I've also gone there, and I, when people visit me, like in my area, like I tend to bring people to that forest. And one of the times too, like the border patrol were like doing drills there because we live on the borderlands of Greece, and because, you know, instead of saving people's lives, they militarize places, and they were training people and they wouldn't let us go walk in the woods. And it was like a very like high tense situation. Yeah. And one dude was getting angry while the other guy was like, have bean soup with us. And I'm just like, I fucking hate you guys. I'm sorry. Maybe that's not great for the podcast, but that just spoiled the scene. I'm like, this is a sacred place. This isn't like for,
that's not what you're going for. Yeah.
That's not the drills that we want here. You know? Yeah.
No.
So.
Well, it seems like the food has been a big part of your love with fungi, and for me too. You know, I like medicine and so on, but what drew me initially to mushrooms was foraging and finding the bounty and cooking it up.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
But so what are some of your favorite ways to prepare mushrooms?
Oh, my ways. So I love me a pickled mushroom.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. Especially like a pickled mushroom, but with like kind of like an olive oil vinegar combo, like Mediterranean style pickles, sour. I do love a fried mushroom. Okay. But I also really love mushrooms that are grilled with olive oil, oregano, and then lemon.
Okay.
Basically Greek barbecue is what we call it, because that's how we like grill meat as well, is like oregano and then lemon. That's amazing, like grilled oysters like that. Amazing. But you can do that with a lot of mushrooms, especially if they're like bigger caps. And but I also love stuffed mushrooms. I also love a good mushroom saute, like how my mom prepared, with like lots of parsley, salt, pepper, butter, and white wine at the end. And the vibe is like adding that acid at the end, if it's appropriate. Obviously, if it's like a cream of mushroom soup and stuff like that, that's a different beast all on its own. But yeah, I like squeezing lemon on a lot of my mushroom dishes, a saute, and squeezing lemon, the best.
Probably helps with the digestibility a little bit too.
It does something. But you know, like, I don't know, chefs, they're doing that. Like there's that salt, heat, acid, fat, or something like that, you know, those four combinations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the acid.
Yeah. You need all those like good mushroom. When you do the pickles, are you mainly like using cooked mushrooms? I've had like Caesar's Amanita, like ceviche style, which I really love, with like the olive oil and the vinegar, salt, garlic. And it kind of, you know, cooks it a little bit in that, but it doesn't like cook it. But I don't, I also know that most mushrooms you want to eat cooked.
Right. Yeah. I've never actually, I've only been the person consuming the pickles. I've never made the mushroom pickle. I leave it to the experts on that one. But yeah, they're usually cooked, pre-cooked in some capacity, and then added to the brine.
Mm-hmm.
Brine. Cool. But there's like, I've heard, you can eat those raw. I wouldn't recommend anyone just gathering amanitas, though, just for the record.
Yeah.
And just be careful out there, everyone. And yeah, I've had like really like thin slice, like porcini mushrooms raw.
Okay.
And then obviously like truffles grated or whatever, raw as well, but yeah, over hot food. And
right,
we have truffles in Greece too.
Ooh. Oh wow.
Yeah, so that's something. And there's the cutest, some of the cutest dogs ever find in the truffles.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So how common are they? Like, have you found truffles?
I haven't, but I have people in my networks and like in my in my area where my family's village is, there's truffle people.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
There's truffle so people. Kind
of mushrooms are you finding these days? Like what's popping in the woods right now?
You know, so right now, I mean, tragically, I haven't really gone too hard to the woods, but in my local parks and in similar ecosystems of like hardwoods in New York, we're finding boletes like porcinis and boletus bicolor, which aren't called that anymore. And we'll get to that, the names, boletus, but like black trumpets, chanterelles, yeah, varieties of chanterelles, not just like the orange ones. You can find some red ones right now, maybe some white ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the horn of plenty. Oh, Lactarius velemus, or like the Bradley families, Lactarius indigo, maybe under some hardwoods. Mm. Lobster mushrooms.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, yeah, those are
good. There's a lot out there. We've gotten a lot of rain. It's been great.
I need to go foraging.
Yeah, you're making me hungry.
Yeah. I know.
So
boletus is one of my like growing edges. Like I've found boletus edgeless, that's the porcini, right? But that once like out on the west coast, but out here in New York there's so many boletes and they're all kind of confusing to me. Do you have any like hard and fast rules for boletes?
You know, I just went to speak at the Western PA Mushroom Club a couple weeks ago and I was showing pictures of boletes, and basically, if it's got like the white netting or the reticulation, it smells good. It's not bitter. It has the ochre, olivaceous, spongy tube layer. Mm-hmm. It's a porcini. It's a boletus edgeless. And it's basically, it's a clad. And I wish I knew more about the taxonomy of this group, but those are pretty safe, you know. And if there's really not many, especially in the Northeast, there's not many poisonous boletes, if any. And that if it's not bitter, it's probably okay.
Oh, cool.
But I'm still wary on it. And I think, but the edgeless clad and or clade or however, tomato, tomato, tastes and smells pretty good and pretty easy ID.
Cool.
Yeah.
There are all those blue staining ones too, various.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are. I need to do a little bit more research on them. But to be honest, the past couple of years have been kind of terrible mushroom years. And this is the first year like that we're back in business, if you will.
Yeah.
Even though we're not making business with the boletes, if you will. Right. It's just for the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's exciting. And I'm really excited to go up to Vermont and be in the forest there, because the land there is like 600 acres or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Fun. So when you're foraging for mushrooms, do you have any best practices? Like I know with herbs, you can really over harvest things. There's ways to harvest things that encourage new growth. Like, do you have any tips for fungi harvesting?
Yeah. I mean, so there's like hot debate out there, like how to ethically gather, and especially with mushrooms. And like the deal is like, supposedly a study was done, if it's like pluck or cut, right?
Yeah.
If you're plucking the mushroom or if you're cutting the mushroom, like leave the stump, don't disturb the mycelium, yada yada. And there was a study, I wish I could tell you who it was, but turns out it didn't make a difference.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's- turns out you just need the forest to stay intact, and like, you know, that'd be cool. So mm-hmm. that was basically the vibe, you know. But I think the general like aspect, the way that I like to gather, I cut, you know, when I know the mushroom, we pluck the whole mushroom out to get the whole thing if we're not for sure about it, if we're trying to learn it, if we're trying to like identify it properly. But if you're like in a sea of chanterelles and you know they're chanterelles, like I cut them because I don't want to bring that dirt and soil into my basket.
Yeah.
Then you're making a dirty snack later, you know,
not more work.
And then you're cleaning more, you know. Yeah. So I do that, but I still double check every mushroom, you know, like when I'm like cooking and preparing it, like I still double check that it's a chanterelle or whatever, you know. I'm like always just making sure. But I generally like, you know, if I see mushrooms, like I harvest the prime looking ones and I leave ones that are like babies to open up potentially and like send out spores, or like I'll take the older ones if they're still in good conditions and then let the babies grow, that type of thing. So, you know, I think ultimately it's just like pick up after yourself, don't leave trash, bring a trash bag to pick up other people's trash, or you know, the blown in stuff, and watch where you step, because yeah, we also could be stepping on plant habitat too, right. You know. And I think gathering for personal or family use, you know, or even like your small little market is not like what's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's like the rows of people going out and like they're literally like going into ecosystems and making like you know, just making trails and places and for gathering for bulk consumption, you know. And I think it probably affects the plant life more than affects the mushroom stuff going on.
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense also, because like the mushroom is the fruiting body. And it's not like if you're digging up a root of a plant and you're killing the plant essentially.
Oh yeah.
With the mushroom, the actual body is under the soil and isn't really affected too much by plucking root off of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's red list fungi, like fungi that are like, yeah, like this is only found here and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, it's because those ecosystems are in peril. It's not because like someone's picking it too much, right? It's about the habitat loss and the disruption of an ecosystem, or from pollution or toxicity and stuff like that. So it's like, I think plants are almost like a little bit more like vulnerable because they're sentient too. You know, we have the mushroom, okay, yeah, is the fruiting body, but the mycelium can reach out in multiple different directions to escape, you know, what's being done to it, if you will. And it has maybe potentially a better chance than like a plant that's like rooted. And the seeds might not be able to get so far. And there's certain, as we know, not every seed is made the same, and they require different things to germinate. So I think fungi are a little bit more resilient in that regard.
Are they also sentient? Or the mycelium?
I mean, like, are they intelligent in that way, right? Yeah, definitely. Of course.
Yeah.
And of course.
Yeah.
Everything is.
And what about Reishi and Chaga though, before we move on?
I mean, I'm just like so sick of every little Chaga company like coming out, honestly. Yeah. It bums me out. Because yeah, it's something that is extracted, you know, like unless they're growing the mycelium of the chaga or Anenotis obliquus fungus, like, you know, we're extracting this from the forest. Or yes, it's a byproduct of a timber industry that they're taking down the trees and they're like, oh, well, we know that this people are buying this.
Yeah.
And so they're selling it to people that are making medicine or products or value added products and stuff like that. Chocolate, so
lotion.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's so weird. Yeah. And like, you know, like a lot of respected people that I know that are like herbalists and, you know, mushroom herbal experts are like, hey, like chaga is like really for like people that are sick, you know, and it's not necessarily something that, you know, that they're like take every day and like kind of, you know, it's that wellness industry that's got us.
Yeah, totally.
In this like race of like, I'm going to buy something and I'm going to get better. I'm buying this and I'm getting better. I'm buying this and I'm getting better. And, you know, this powder and these things, and we're not thinking of like where it's coming from, you know, but yeah, I don't like to see it. You know, I think that yes, if we want that medicine, let's get it, but let's like, and like all of our medicine, let's like get it in a way where we're not potentially harming, or it's like gathered in a respectable way. You know, like, with that, yeah. And I know that like can also be like lace and privileged as well. And some people just need access to medicine, and maybe they're only able to get the stuff that's at the stores that might not be sourced in the best way, if you will, you know? So it's a sticky subject. It's a sticky subject, you know, like getting people the medicine and people wanting that, but also like people taking advantage of that and like providing subpar mushroom products or plant products or whatever it might be, because people are desperate for quality healthcare.
Totally. And yeah, I think your point about it being like strong medicine is important too. So like utilizing it in the way that you're going to be getting the strongest extraction through like doing a decoction and doing, you can do it over and over and over. Some people might not know how to use it. Totally. So they make a tea once and they throw it out when it could be going on the stove for another 2 months.
I know. It's really,
Yeah. But I think it's good to, just know about it and talk about it and encourage, you know, people to move away from it in skincare products and more towards like people internal. Medicine internally. Yeah.
And like, I think too, it's like, it's amazing. And chaga is so tasty and delicious. It's like, of course I drink this every day. It's like, it's an amazing blessing. Yes. And then you got reishi, which is also that, but it's so bitter, you know, but I welcome people growing more reishi. I welcome people growing more turkey tail. You know, there's definitely word on the street that they're successfully growing chaga in on birch in somewhere in Scandinavia. I'm not entirely sure, but that was something that I remember hearing a few months ago, which who knows what that's looking like. But I mean, regardless, if it's not cultivated, chaga is an extractive ingredient, if you will. So source it well if we can.
Yeah, I guess one of the parts of that is that we don't exactly know how it reproduces. Is that correct?
You know, I think so, but I also like maybe they figured it out by now, because like there's just so many
studies
out, and last time I checked it was kind of like it is a polypore. The chaga itself is the sclerotia. It's the resting stage. So it's like every mushroom that we might be familiar with, a shiitake or a reishi, oyster, whatever, it has its mycelial stage. And then it has its fruiting body stage. But this mycelium decides to like make the sclerotia, what we know as chaga. And it's very, what I can remember is that it's not until the tree or its host that it's on, like is kind of ready to call it quits. And that's when it starts switching energy to make a fruiting body, which hasn't been seen many times in the wilds. So that's the last story I heard about Chaga.
Yeah,
that's the last word on the street about Chaga for me.
That's what I've kind of heard too. That does bring up the question though, in regards to like potent medicines and mycelium versus fruiting bodies. What is your take on, because there is in the health industry, mushrooms are becoming big business and people have different opinions about using the whole mycelium block versus just the fruiting bodies in the medicine. And what do you think about that? Is the mycelium as potent as the fruiting bodies?
Does it depend on the mushroom?
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about this here. So one, I think it's like back to that concept of like what you have access to, go for it, you know?
Yeah.
If all you have access is Paul Stamets's stuff, that is all mycelial powder.
Okay. And very expensive too.
And it's expensive, okay? Or you can like weave in the different companies that are providing different functional mushroom extracts and supplements, stuff like that, that are putting mushroom plus the mycelium, maybe doing both. Because really, like, not many people, especially capsules, aren't doing like just powders in the capsule. They're not just doing mushrooms. It's usually a blend in the capsules or the powders, because it would be a lot of mushrooms. I see more of like the fresh mushroom or like the whole mushroom and like the extracts and things like that in the tincture. I think both mycelium and mushrooms have medicinal benefits for sure. Okay. If you're not growing mushrooms and you're just like going out and finding turkey tail or finding reishi or getting stuff from other people, you know, you're not going to work with mycelium because you don't have access to it, right? So you're just going to make medicine with the mushroom. But if you are growing mushrooms, you could choose to grow them on grain and, you know, take the whole bag with the fruiting body and the mycelium and the grain and, you know, process that to make medicine. So you're having that whole spectrum. And yeah, there are differentiations in the medicinal components of mushroom in, you know, different mushrooms and their mycelial form versus their fruiting body form. To my knowledge, I think like for the most part, the mushrooms are winning. Okay. If we want to like make it be like, what's the best? But I think like the mycelium's not far behind. Right. Okay. So it's like that concept too, where it's like, if we're finding Ganoderma suge or the hemlock reishi, it's not the true reishi. Or if we're finding the Ganoderma sessile, the one that like grows here on the hardwoods, it's not the true reishi. But it's like, it's got so much of the same components that we're just going to call it reishi for the concept, for like the general concept of it, you know? And that's how I feel about the mycelium versus fresh mushroom or, you know, whole mushroom component. But, you know, I don't really make a lot of medicine with the mycelium because I'm not really growing on grain so much. I'm growing on wood.
You don't really want to be eating sawdust.
No.
Unless you're, it's a Parmesan cheese, right?
Yeah, so they already put it enough in our food anyways. You know what I mean? Yeah. I only like it in Parmesan.
Yeah.
Flavor the Parmesan.
Just the sprinkle cheese.
Just the sprinkle cheese. Oh my God. It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. But that's a good distinction. Like if you do get mushroom growing blocks to grow at home and they're on sawdust versus grain, then maybe don't make mycelium, you know, extract out of them. And I think there's also like some companies do a better job of letting the mycelium actually take over the whole grain.
Right.
They let it go for like the amount of time that's needed versus just like the final product being mostly grain and not a lot of mycelium.
And I think that just it's about what you want to have, you know. And for me, I'm not a powder person. I don't make smoothies and things like that. I never was, but like there was also some studies that my fellow quirky eater also mentioned that there were like studies in China about like reishi powders affecting people's livers.
Interesting.
And that because it was like dust, we're talking dust powder, you know, that it's like, is it actually dissolving or being absorbed and like what's happening? And so I don't mind like a pulverization, you know, so it can maybe be brewed easier, especially with reishi and harder mushrooms, like more like conch polypore mushrooms. But yeah, I typically don't like powders.
And sometimes they might not be cooking the mushroom before they turn it into a powder. And maybe that is causing issues too.
Exactly.
So you just throw it
in a whole other step. And that's another thing. It's like, it's more fine print. Like, are you do they heat the product before they put it in the little thing? So you open it and add it, or does it need to be heated in your hot water, you know, first, or are you adding it to your smoothie?
And really even just steeping mushroom, like the hard mushrooms, like reishi and so on, you should be boiling them for 2 hours.
a little simmer, a little sim.
To break it all down and release all the good stuff.
Definitely.
But I have been liking the powders partially because I don't like alcohol so much. Like I do take tinctures, but I drink shakes, so it's nice to have those. But we also made our own, and we boiled it nice and good. We did the Instapot thing, you know, so they get fully, and they're also not totally pulverized either, because we only had like a coffee grinder. And it doesn't even get the reishi is so hard.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah,
also kind of spongy. It doesn't like it's harder to powderize, I guess. For our home scale.
Absolutely. I usually cut them, process the reishi fresh,
right,
and then dry it if I'm gonna like use it later in like some type of way.
Yeah, it gets so hard
because it's it's difficult. I have been really loving like vinegars as like a non-alcohol alternative, especially like things like cordyceps. They actually, the cordycepin that you want from it does better in a vinegar, extracts, the efficacy is increased because the cordycepin is extracted higher in vinegar or like citric acid, if you want to go ceviche style. But we've been loving the cordyceps oxymel. We've been doing some reishi vinegars, lion's mane vinegar and lion's mane oxymel. And yummy.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So do you cook those before you extract them, or are you extracting them dried or raw in the vinegar?
I usually work with fresh mushrooms just because we're growing, and I break them up small and I add them to the vinegar, and they hang in the vinegar for a while before I add the honey. So they're basically like chemical cooking.
That's awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. It's really nice. And I've done, actually just back to like food stuff, is like I've done literally like lion's mane and oyster ceviche with like just, you know, lemon juice and a little bit of olive oil with like herbs and poblano peppers and, you know, just like the right, lots of cilantro, and that cooked in a day in the fridge, and it was amazing.
Those softer mushrooms maybe lend themselves better to that. Like I was, the Caesar's Amanita was so good that way. Really good. That's really cool. I need to try that.
Absolutely. Great method.
We do have sugar maple, so we boil down the sap with some like reishi and so on.
Yes.
which is another good food way.
Absolutely. It's a nice hack.
Yeah, medicinal mushroom syrup with reishi and red belt of polypore.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
So do you have any final tips or thoughts for anybody who is thinking about going into like a mushroom based business? Someone who is like, you know what, I'm inspired by the fungi and I'm just going to dedicate my life to them. Like, you know, you have.
Yeah. Well, definitely. If you want to dedicate yourself to fungi, don't start a business.
Dedicating yourself to business.
Because then you're dedicating yourself to business and not the mushrooms. I mean, yeah, it's just funny, like, because my love started in the forest, and now I'm spending less time in the forest because I'm business-ing, as my father would say, okay? Business.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's still, now we cherish the moments that we're spending in the forest, but I really love the concepts of that there's so much more access to information now than there was like when I first wanted to start a mushroom farm 18 years ago, where Paul Samuels was kind of the only book out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Shroomery was like kind of just for psychedelic mushrooms, and there wasn't a lot of information out there. Now it's like you can grow mushrooms with the help of a million people on the internet, because the Shroomery now does have their forums for cultivation and gourmet mushrooms, and there's a million and one Facebook groups on cultivation, and there's a lot more books, a lot more diversity in authors out there that are like giving you support. And my advice is, don't drop 20 grand to grow a mushroom. Take it from me, you don't need to. And yeah, I love, and I wish I had the book when I first started growing, but my dear friend Willoughby Aravalo, he wrote a book called DIY Mushroom Cultivation. That book is, I think, an essential component to have if you are starting to grow mushrooms, whether it's for just home or for business.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Olga. This has been really wonderful to chat with you. And I look forward to seeing you at New Moon Mycology and at our conference in September, the Plant Cutting Conference.
Yes, I'm excited for that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me here. Thank you for hosting that conference and gathering people. And your podcast is so lovely. And I learn so much all the time, every time. And it's been a pleasure being here. Thank you, Isaac and AC, so much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day.